Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek. Every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring you special guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today in our constantly changing future. Now, Answers for the Family will address issues such as locating your runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, or dealing with addictions. As I'm sure many of you expected to hear Alan's voice this morning, we are reminded of the reality of what he does when he's not on the air. As a licensed professional, private investigator, and crisis interventionist, he gets calls and has to respond quickly, be it a locating a runaway teen, escorting a teen to a specific program, or retrieving an abducted child. Alan is out there. He's in Miami, actually, today. I talked with him last night, and I wanted to wish him best of luck. He's dealing, again, with a young girl that's caught up in one of these, child abduction ring. So hopefully he's able to get her and bring her home to her family healthy and soon. I myself have my wife's out of town, and so I dropped my daughter off to school today, and I'm watching all the kids kind of run around, and my daughter runs up to me and says something what another kid said, and it got me thinking about my own school and dealing with kids and emotions and feelings. And one of the kind of topics that seems to come up a lot is this idea of bullies. And as a parent, I feel completely helpless in the fact that if someone says something to my daughter or does something, there's really not much I can do at that moment. And so one of the things that Alan and I discuss with families all the time is how do we deal with our children when they're being bullied and when you know, stuff, situations like this arise. And we are very lucky today to have someone, a wonderful author and person who spent a lot of time working in the field, to discuss this. And we're bringing in Roy Diamond today, but he was not always a writer. And for most of his adult life, he was actually a youth worker. And he worked with families that were struggling or children who were having a hard time. Roy was also a parenting worker, assisting adults to learn new skills. These were professions that were both rewarding and heartbreaking for him. In the 30 years that he was a youth worker, he learned that no matter how difficult life is, if one can answer, who am I and what do I believe in, then the lessons that the universe is teaching will be learned. That led him on a journey halfway around the world and back. When he returned, he began writing. Roy has written The Single Bull, a novel of one man's search for a book lost to the world. His second novel, Silence and Circumstance, is a fictional account of the 11 days that Agatha Christie went missing. He also wrote The Rubicon Effect, which I actually read and I loved. And he now brings us I, Bully, a middle grade novel about cyberbullying and its repercussions. It is told from the perspective of both the victim and the bully with the help of Native American circle sessions. Roy, I am very excited to have you, and welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you very much, Matt. I'm really happy to be here.
And you chose a book on bullying and cyberbullying. What led you to that?
Well, as you mentioned, it's virtually epidemic in our society, and it's not going to get any smaller unless we kind of, as adults, step up and start dealing with it in a very aggressive way. Cyberbullying is in every neighborhood, in every school, and I think basically the people that are doing it, they're not fully aware of it even being bullying at times. It's just something that almost becomes kind of a fad and just kind of pile on without realizing there's real human beings at the end of that email or social media, however you do it. I think everybody here and all your listeners, they've either been bullied or they've watched somebody else be bullied or maybe unfortunately done some bullying themselves. So it's kind of a relentless thing, and when it becomes commonplace, it eventually becomes epidemic. So I wanted to kind of jump in that ring and write something that might have a positive effect.
Yeah, it's amazing. I read a study that 70% of people have witnessed bullying and over 30% have been bullied. But in the book, I guess one thing I want to differentiate is between bullying and specific bullying and then cyberbullying. When we're talking about cyberbullying, we're talking about anything on the internet. Is that fair or?
Yes, I think that's accurate. The bullying that's from my past is sort of a thing where you might be walking down a back alley and, you know, the older kids are there and they want to bully and take your money or whatever. But there's an end to it. There's a interaction and it's usually over. But with cyberbullying, the market is sort of open 24 hours a day, and it's somebody can say one thing, whether it's accurate or not, and then other people pile on, and it builds a momentum far beyond anything that bullying used to be.
And I know that, you know, with your books, you do a lot of research. And when you were researching for this book, did you notice that bullying, because to me it seems so much more catastrophic because there's a written paper trail of it. It's kind of in the history books once people post things. Did you notice that the effects because of cyberbullying were worse than the bullying that you and I had?
Well, we've all seen the unfortunate and horrible stories of people who have committed suicide from cyberbullying, and the fact that there's, you know, a screen is so prevalent in our society today. It's not like, you know, it's TV from 1950 and you look at it for a couple hours a night. A screen, it's at your school, it's at your home, it's while you're on the bus, it's everywhere you go. There's sort of a screen following people. And that screen has real words on it. And those words are just as damaging as if somebody was, you know, cutting you in the back with a knife. If you can't shut that screen off, and it's extremely hard to do in today's society, and especially for young people, then that means those words are kind of cutting at you all day long, every day, from a thousand different angles. So, yeah, I think it's incredibly more significant now than it was back in our day.
Are you seeing, and again, based on your research from the book, are you seeing this idea of having a screen in front of you, are you seeing it from even younger ages than it used to be, or is it a specific kind of range, you know?
No, it's without a doubt it's getting younger. I've retired from education now, and my wife worked a few years longer than I did as a counselor, and I was really quite stunned at the just watching the ages sort of drop down into grade 7, grade 6, grade 5, where kids are, you know, they're so connected now, but that means it's easy to reach out and touch them. And when you do, I've always used the example that words have weight and they have real repercussions. So those young kids without the skills of the older kids are getting pounded now harder than we used to. Mm-hmm. And being so young without the walls and the mechanisms that we have to kind of defend ourselves, the effects are absolutely devastating.
It's interesting, as I kind of think about my own daughter and I think about parents that have come into my private practice and asked, you know, they ask advice, what age and what would you do and yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, you know, you want your kid to be relevant socially and to be able to access the same things that other kids are able to access. I think I'm kind of questioning that myself as I'm saying it. What's your take on all that as far as maybe more specific to, you know, is there an age we want to allow kids, or what's your thoughts on it?
Well, personally, I personally believe that the longer that they don't get attached to that social media, the healthier they are. Like, because it means while they're young, they're doing other activities. Today we have a beautiful sunny day where I'm living, and I'm seeing little kids down on the beach, and they're, you know, using pails and putting sand in it, and other kids are chasing their dogs and stuff like that. And every time that they're doing that, I think that's a much healthier activity than being attached to a screen. That being said, it's also going to be impossible to keep your kids away from that screen as they grow. But if you can keep them away as long as possible, then I think that's healthier. But again, I think if at some point the kids are kind of fighting you back on it, and they see all their friends with, you know, telephones and all that kind of smartphones and stuff like that, they're going to interact with that media at some point. The best thing you can do at that point is be involved yourself. I don't think there's any reason for a kid in grade 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 even to be on a computer screen unattended for hours at a time just exploring the internet. I think people need to say that this is a big thing now, and we need to be a part of it if our kid's going to be a part of it, and get involved in it and realize there's things out there in that social media that is really bad, and at no time would you want your kid involved in that. So be aware of what they're looking at, be aware of who they're interacting with on those kind of things. It's just you know, be connected with your kid.
I love it. And, I know that you're out in Canada there on a with a water, an area where there's a lot of activities around water and stuff like that. But it sounds like, aside from getting your kids outside to do things and be part of things, what I hear you saying is really there's some accountability on the parent side to be more involved in their kid's life and to not just leave them for 3 hours at a time. In front of that computer. You're right. I mean, my daughter, anything I say is literally repeated back 2 hours later, and at least I have control of what she's hearing then. But the internet is really wild in what you can access in a very quick amount of time.
And that control that you're talking about, that interaction with your daughter, which is so healthy, when she runs up against the screen and has to deal with that, if you have already got a relationship with her, then you're halfway there. A lot of the parents, if they don't have a relationship with their kid, they're too busy, they don't know how, then when their kid runs up against the screen, then what happens is it's almost too late to start interacting with your child. I always use the example of if we deal with the relationship first, we can build bridges, but if we only deal with their behavior, then we're building walls. And bottom line is the more time you spend talking to your kid, the more time you interact with them, when the problems do come, then you've got a relationship there that you can interact with them on.
That's beautiful. Well, I know everyone listening probably wants me to get to iBully, so let's move on to the book. And one of the really cool things about this book is that you present the perspective of both the victim and the bully, which I think it's really cool and inventive, and it's nice for people to see both sides. But what led you to want to do that?
I appreciate the kind words there. Yeah, when I first started, especially from my experience counseling kids on bullying and stuff, I really found that it sounds strange, but there's almost a dance between the bullies and the victims. The bullies need to learn very quickly and as soon as possible why they're bullying. And once they figure that out, once an adult helps them get that information, they almost always stop bullying. But the same also goes often, not all the time, but often with the victims. If they can learn why they sometimes set themselves up or why they're in circumstances that they're the ones being picked out of, say, a classroom of 30, why is that particular kid being bullied? If they can learn some of that stuff, the victims have always found it really empowering. And the bullies, I always ask them at some point, when you hurt that kid and you tear him down, did it build you up? And I've never seen a bully yet go, yeah, I felt really good about myself after I hurt that kid. They always kind of look at the floor and kind of get sheepish and quiet and pretty introspective. So I wanted the book to kind of reveal that to both sides, that the bullies can read this book and see, hey, victims are real human beings and there's real repercussions for what you've done to them. And a victim can see that, a bully is only trying to build himself up by tearing you down. And it's your choice if you allow them to tear you down. It's not their choice. They don't have that power. So once both sides kind of see that perspective of the other side, it's very empowering.
Well, and I also like how we get to learn about Eric's family too, and so we also have a little bit of more, I think, sympathetic view of how Eric turned into the way Eric is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I talked to a few people. I obviously use my own experience, but I talked to a few writer friends of mine who were in education, and that was a real common theme of Eric's life is his family's pretty dysfunctional, not a lot of love, not a lot of hugs. At one point in the book, Eric kind of gets frustrated and in his own mind says, when was the last time you ever hugged me? When was the last time you ever told me you loved me? And that sounds probably like a trite question to many parents out there, but from my perspective as a youth worker, I was always really shocked at how often I asked a parent, when was the last time you gave your kid a hug? And they, you know, 2 years, not an uncommon distance between hugs. I think sometimes they think, oh, my boy's, you know, 14 and he's too old, and my daughter's 15 and she's too old and she doesn't want it. You're wrong. They do want it. They may not ask for it. They may even squirm when you give them a hug, but you give them three hugs, that fourth hug is easier. And that was the premise of Eric's family, is that they didn't have any of that, just heartfelt warmth in the family. The parents were having some difficulties, so that was unfortunately a really common theme in my time.
It's amazing, as I hear you talk about the hugs and about Eric's experience, it makes me realize, and also my intro about my daughter at school and feeling helpless somewhat, it makes you realize how much parents really aren't helpless, and we play a huge role in this. It's not a matter of the victim and the bully. It's a matter of what can we do as parents, and where is our accountability of being involved in our kids' life? And we have a huge role in this, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely, for sure. I mean, the big word for parents is participation. Like, participate in your kid's life, and when they don't like it, participate more, and when they don't like it, participate more, and eventually the kids will eventually become aware that you're going to be a part of their life, whether they want it that momentary week or that day or not. You're there, and you're going to be there, because when the problems come and when they hit the screen and they start interacting with that social media, they're going to have a choice. I've got a big problem here. Do I turn to my parents and say, help, or this is going on in my life, or do I have no interaction with my parents, no bridges are built, no communication, so I have to turn back to the screen and deal with it myself? When that happens, that's when everybody's in a lot of trouble. So for parents, yeah, you're not helpless, but you might need to hear no a lot, and you might need to hear sort of grumbled complaints a lot, but if you hang in there, I can promise you that those no's and those grumbled complaints get less and less. And when the problems come, you will have a relationship with your family, with your children.
Just out of curiosity, you chose a male and female character for, you know, the protagonist. Well, I don't like the word protagonist with this book, but, you know, the bully mm-hmm. and the victim. Was there some thought into picking those specific genders, or...
Yeah, a tough question for me there, Matt, to be honest with you. I'll be blunt. Part of my thinking, and not all of my thinking, but part of my thinking was simply sales. I wanted a book that both males and females would find interesting to pick up and read. The better reason and the healthier reason and is simply, I think that it's a book where boys need to see that their interaction with girls, it's written for sort of middle grade when they're getting more interest in girls and stuff, that their interactions are a big deal. And we all know guys tend to, when they're young, be maybe less than honest with their interactions with girls, and girls are maybe a little looking for boyfriends all the time, or however you want to say it. And I wanted them to read what starts as an unhealthy relationship between the boy and the girl, a lot of hidden feelings under the surface that they're both struggling with. In the end, I think it's a really healthy, wonderful relationship that the two of them have. And I wanted to write something there, too, that boys and girls could read that, yeah, I know you've got all these feelings and sometimes you say the wrong thing, but there's a way to the relationship that you want to have with that other person.
See, I think it's great because I think you broadens your audience, and any way to get more eyes on the book will help us start this conversation, which is really what you're saying is the point, is to start having these conversations about bullying and being bullied. And one thing you said earlier, which I really liked, is something along the lines of the these are roles that these kids are playing, basically.
Oh, absolutely. And those roles mostly come from the roles that they see between their parents. And lots of other adults and other children help them find their way in their roles. But how the mother in the book interacts with her husband, that builds the roles for those kids. I'll tell you a quick little story. When I was in the classroom, I was working with a new teacher, and I went over to her desk, and I started a conversation with her. And she said, "No, Rory, we're working right now. We can't have a conversation. The kids are here, and we need to be doing stuff." And I said, "Just take a breath, and these kids need to see an adult male and an adult female like each other. Mm-hmm. They need to see us say, 'How's your day? How are you doing? Do you need anything? Can I help you?' They need to see us talk, because we're going to have a way bigger influence that way than anything we're trying to teach the kids. They're watching us like hawks. So let's show them how adults should interact." And that teacher, like 20 years later, told me that was one of the best pieces of information she ever got.
I mean, the therapist in me loves that. And my biggest issue right now in the schools is that we don't sit and have these conversations about bullies, and this is, should be built in curriculum. You know, this is emotional, you know, how to handle coping skills and how to handle stress and how to, you know, feel empowered and all these things.
Yeah. It's one of my pet peeves. I worked in education for 33 years, and when I started, the school year started differently than it does now. Now it's teachers are in the classroom a week or 2 weeks beforehand. They're getting it all set up. They're getting it all ready so the kids can come in and they start teaching. 30 years ago, teachers didn't go in a week or 2 weeks early. They might have gone in a day just to make sure everything was that what they needed was there. But the school year started off sort of together. Them and the kids had just come from this hopefully incredible summer. Let's talk. Let's meet each other. Let's get to know each other's names. And a week later, we might start getting into the school books. But at first, it was always more communication happened in the past. I'm really finding the schools nowadays, there's less and less communication going on between adult and children.
Does this book, because, you know, you've written four at this point, and does this book bring you the most back? I mean, I'm looking at your other novels, and this one to me seems more connected to your 30 years of working with families than any of the other books. Is this kind of an homage to your work?
Absolutely. My other books were sort of, I had gone traveling and experienced a few incredible things, and came back and I realized, hey, I'm a writer. So I started writing and had a little bit of success and fortunately got some books published. But this one was, man, I really don't like what I see happening in society. This might not be popular with the viewers, I don't know, but I think countries are becoming more like bullies. I think the leaders of some countries are becoming more like bullies. And that bullying is almost looked up to as power. And it's not power. It isn't. It's the exact opposite of it. And so I decided I want to write a book that goes back to the core of this issue, back to the children and maybe a generation who can see that they don't have to be bullies, they don't have to be victims. Because right now I'm really worried that a lot of role models in many of our countries are just basically bullies themselves.
Wow. I mean, you opened up a whole can of worms for me there.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
I mean, you know, I did some research before the show, and 25% of school bullies will later on be convicted of, you know, criminal offense. And these bullies are being taught this kind of alternative aggression, and they will habitually tend to use power in an abusive manner the more it builds. And so, I mean, you know, without getting too political, I think we're seeing, you know, the result of, you know, within our country and other countries, a lot of this idea of, you know, having trouble differentiating between power and abuse. But to kind of go on that point, what do you think, you know, again, what is the bully in the book, Eric, what do you think is the answer? Is it education to bullies about, you know, understanding how they've come to be that way? Or is it moving forward on what they can do to be heard without using, you know, bullying techniques?
I think the answer is the same for both the bully and the victim. I think the way out is, and from my experience has always been, meeting one significant adult. That can change everything. As I say in the book, the kids are used to going to their peers and commiserating, and that's important. It's important to go to a friend and say this is happening. But young people they don't have the life experiences. They can only commiserate, basically say what the other person needs or wants to hear, and support them. But to find solutions, to find answers, I've seen so many bullies and so many victims, their entire life changed by simply meeting one significant adult. And what makes that adult significant is his ability to listen, not to necessarily have answers. As I say in the book, when Eric turns to a teacher for help finally, the teacher is honest. He says, I can't fix this. I can't change these things. What I can do is go through this with you so that you don't have to go through it by yourself. And that is so empowering once a child realizes that they've got somebody there with them. And it's hopefully a parent, but if it's not a parent, then hopefully a teacher or a counselor or a coach in a sports team or somebody from your church. One significant adult is the solution.
Wow. And the coolest part of what you just said was they don't have to fix it. The adult doesn't have to fix it. They have to listen and be there.
Yeah. And the truth is the adult can't fix it. There's nothing they can do that's going to go back and change the circumstances of what happened or even prevent it from happening in the future. I get a little frustrated with a lot of the programs that are on now for no tolerance in schools and stuff like that. Like the schools are going to be able to stop it. And when they don't stop it, it's a failure. But the truth is, it's a much more complicated issue than that. So just being there for people and listening and having the life experience to be able to share that you're not in this by yourself is the solution.
We are very lucky and fortunate to have you here, Roy Diamond. The book is I Bully. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be back soon. Thanks for listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you.
Welcome back to Answers for the Family. I'm your co-host, Dr. Matt Polichuk, and with me is Roy Diamond, author of I Bully. Roy, as we started this conversation, the emails have been coming in fast and furious, and Rachel in Tucson just wrote us and said, I'm very concerned about my son, who has become very withdrawn the last few months. He has been insisting we drive him to school instead of taking the bus. He is also refusing to participate in activities and sports. We feel like he may be being bullied, but he will not open up to us about what is going on. What is your advice, and how do we find out what's really happening?
Yeah, that's a really important question there. And one of the first things to do is sort of what I call change the horizon. Make your efforts from the perspective of having long-term goals. If you're going to try and, again, we just talked about this, but if you're going to try and fix it, you can't. If you're going to try and heal it overnight, obviously that's not going to happen. But set a long-term goal so that, I don't know the circumstances well enough, but say 6 months from now, you're in a better position with your son than you are now. And the best way to do that is to be patient, consistent, and doing everything you can to let them be aware that you're there for them. You'll listen without a lot of judgments, that you'll hear what they have to say. But if you push them and try to get this resolved by next weekend or next week even, or even a month from now, he's going to get more quiet and probably a little darker. So if you get a chance to talk to him about how was school over dinner and be ready for, you know, monosyllabic grunts and groans and whatever, and it doesn't matter. And, you know, that's those are words that he's using to express that he doesn't want you involved because he doesn't know how to solve this. But if you keep asking, and again, not be pushy about it, but just be aware, be in his proximity. Get, as I say, as the kids get older, we need to be in their space. Not in a pushy, shovey way, but in an accommodating, I'm here for you. And not just ask, you know, once that day and then let's bring it up again next week sometime. But, you know, every day he comes home, get him used to him hearing, how was school today? Did you have a good time? What happened? And eventually, over the course of a few days or a week or even a month, he will start using more words. And when he uses more words, you really have to hear and listen to what those words are saying. And if you can simply, the best thing that you can do is have a long-term set of goals so that at this time, next 6 months from now, or 8 months, or a year, you're in a better position. If you push too hard, you're building walls. If you take your time and patience and be in his proximity and be there for him, and just let him know, if you ever need to talk, I'm here for you. And there'll be a day when he turns around and he says, can we talk? That's when you build bridges. So don't be, don't give up, and don't get frustrated, but have a longer, a broader horizon and longer term goals.
Wow, Roy, you are a gift to us on the show, and I, you know, I really appreciate all your feedback. And the book, you know, is interesting because I'm thinking about my daughter, and when I think of the someone who's mean or bullying for her at school, my first feeling is to keep her far away from this person and never have her see that kid again. But looking at the book, you talk about these circle sessions and you talk about the bully and the victim in the same room. Will you kind of touch on that a little?
Yeah, I had the good fortune. I lived in a small fishing village for a few years, and I had the good fortune to be involved in restorative justice and healing circles. Native American concepts, and I was actually blown away my first time that I did it. I thought, this is so much better and so farther developed than what our criminal court system is. I've gone to, you know, hundreds and hundreds of court cases, and you know, it's the judge, it's the lawyer, and the child who's involved is sit there, and he almost never has to say anything. The lawyer speaks for him. But in a circle session, the healing circles, boy, that focus is on that kid, and in a really healthy way, not in a bad way. He gets to say what he wants to say too. So the one of the better circumstances I had was I got to represent a mountain, because two kids had gone up this mountain and started a really, really bad forest fire, and cost huge amounts of money. But they were young and they were truly regretful for their actions, so everyone decided it was better if we went into the healing circle rather than the criminal court system. And what I discovered there is that when we all get to sit and look at each other and we get to see each other in the face and we become human, then what happens is that the real healing and the real changes begin. And if you ever sit in one of these and you see a victim and a bully in the same room, like I described in the book, they have to talk to each other. They have to deal with each other. And even if it's silence, even if it's only tears, it's impactful, as opposed to sitting in a docket and having your lawyer speaking for 15 minutes and that's the court case. We've sat in circle sessions for 3 to 5 hours. And not because it's grueling and intensive, but because it's healing, and it's you break bread at the end of it. It's a wonderful experience. So once the bully and the victim are in the same room together, they do way more work and better work than I could ever do by facilitating that meeting. Once they're talking, we're halfway there.
It's funny, the therapist in me thinks the first concern would be re-traumatization, but I guess because you have control over the environment, that doesn't happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And both parties are prepped for it. They can pick people that they trust, adults that they trust to be there with them. If neither party wants to be there, they're absolutely, it doesn't happen. Both parties have to agree to want to participate in it. And as I said, too, once the victim sees that they have somebody there who's going to go through the experience with them, it's very empowering. And you get them in that room together, and sometimes that victim is not so much of a victim when it's all an equal playing field. Mm. And that's a great experience for everybody to experience.
And this is a Native American cultural concept?
It's in a lot of tribes across North America have it. I know in Alberta, one of our provinces, there's a tribe that's going to be looking at iBully to see if it's something they want to consider. So yeah, a lot of tribes across North America. It's maybe used a little more in Canada, but I'm not really sure about that. But healing circles and restorative justice are common themes across North America.
Sounds really cool. In fact, out here in LA, a lot of this is a smaller scale, but a lot of the traditional means of punishment, whether it's suspension or this and that, they're looking at doing meditation and stuff like that instead. And on a Saturday, instead of sitting in detention from 9 to 12, you're being taught coping skills and meditation during that time. So it sounds along the similar lines. We're a little bit more progressive, or we're getting there, I hope.
Well, I think anything that humanizes the process, it's got to be a step in the right direction rather than just convicting and that cycle that starts at 14 years old for a kid going into juvie. We've seen the results of that. We've got the studies. We've got the statistics. So trying something new that puts a little bit of a human face on it might not be such a bad thing.
I love it. And the book kind of pulls this, and it pulls a lot of just nature themes too. Is that intentional, the way you utilize nature in the book?
Yeah, I, it goes to the Native experiences. So much of that, I think we've kind of missed in the mainstream society, but nature has tremendous healing qualities. Ask anybody who's had a bad day and gone for a walk around the lake. I forget, unfortunately, who said it, but one of the great quotes that I've learned is, truth is but a walk around the lake. You put yourself in a quiet environment, you put yourself in a natural environment, voices within are allowed to be heard. And it's really hard for human beings to lie to themselves. That's something I've learned from my counseling. It's once you kind of face yourself, it's very, very difficult to say, oh yeah, I'm not really a bully, I'm just having a bad day. It's more likely the voice will rise to the surface of, wow, I was a real jerk there. And I really do believe nature, that stopping to smell the roses sort of thing, is extremely powerful and effective.
Wow. William is writing in to us, and William is writing, Mr. Diamond, cyberbullying has become a huge issue at our school. I'm a fourth grade teacher, and I'm alarmed that children this age are being allowed to have access to social media by their parents. This is what we were discussing earlier. It is unfortunate because they can be quite cruel in the ways they are not mature enough to understand long-term effects. Is your book one that I could refer the parents to?
I'd like to think so. That's basically why I wrote it. The strong theme in the book is words have weight. And a lot of the time, especially with younger kids like grade four, they don't have the experience to understand that what they're saying is real. Like these words, Native Americans use the term, words are stones. And you can pick up a stone and throw it at somebody, or you can play catch with it, or you can put it down and decide not to share it. Words have weight. So you can load up other people with rocks in their pockets and rocks in their socks and hold them down, or you can decide not to use words as weapons. And even though your kids are young, these are concepts that I think their parents should surely understand and need to understand. And again, goes back to what we were mentioning before, that when they come up against the screen, I think the parents of those kids should be involved with every word that's read on their children's screen, and every word that they're writing on that screen should be seen by the parents. And there's no reason for them to be saying things on that screen that their parents would be offended and horrified by if they said them to their kid walking past on the street. So to participate and be involved.
That's great. In the intro, I discussed a little bit about you know, that you had said something along the lines of, no matter how difficult life is, if you could answer, who am I and what do I believe in, then the lessons that the universe is teaching will be learned. To me, that the who am I and what do I believe in is critical for us all to think about and live by. Was that a turning point in your life when you realized that, or has that just kind of guided you throughout?
No, I'd have to say it was something I evolved to and something that was a turning point. It goes to, as all these issues, bullying and victim, it goes to self-esteem. And self-esteem goes to who you think you are. If you can experience enough in life, and I think one way of doing that is to slow down, enjoy nature, listen to your own words, listen to yourself, get to know yourself. Once you get to a point where you know who I am, and then you're almost any problem that you come up against is not insurmountable. When I was counseling, I used to do grief counseling. I used to do bullying, parenting work, basically every type of counseling you can imagine. And I found my words were always kind of going to, who are you? And once we kind of were able to work to the point of them saying, I am this person, the issues that we were talking about, whether it was grief counseling or bullying or even addiction, they were solvable. And that was a real insight. It took me a lot of years of counseling and a lot of different subjects to realize I was really fundamentally probably only talking about one thing, and that was us getting to where you know who you are. And once we got to that place, all of a sudden, these other issues of my grief or my addictions or whatever, they were looked at from a perspective of empowerment, of a perspective of, I can deal with this.
Yeah. It's fascinating. You know, I read all these different psychological theories, and as a therapist, I'm fascinated that you and I could read books and books and do all this kind of theological work, and we come back to a very simple premise. And if you think of the world as, you know, there's a stimulus and then there's a response, and sometimes those responses are conditioned and yada, yada, yada. We've heard it all. But if you can build space between it and answer that question, there's a stimulus, someone says something to you, you think about who you are and I am and the type of person you are, and then you respond based on that, your life is gonna feel a lot better, would be my guess.
Well, I think Einstein said it best when he said this, and I use it to this concept, is that it to make life simple but not simpler. And I think that's the golden ticket almost, is if you can answer who are you, who am I, and what do I believe in. What you've done is take this complex life at whatever age you're at, and you've made it simpler. You haven't made life itself simpler, but the perspective is now life is manageable. I know who I am. I know what I believe in. So anything coming at me, you know, I could be in an earthquake, or I could lose, I have a wonderful wife, I could lose my wife, but I will always be able to go back to, I know who I am and I know what I believe in, and nothing can ever take that away. An earthquake can take away my house, a car accident can take away my wife, but nothing can ever take away my knowledge of who I am and what I believe in. So once you get that, I think Einstein understood that it makes life simpler, but not simpler.
Wow. I hope our listeners are enjoying this as much as I am.
That's some nice words there. Thank you.
As far as the book, I Bully, obviously any teenager would enjoy reading it, any parent. The book's obviously aimed for a wide range of people. Is there any people out there that would really benefit from the book that I'm not mentioning?
No, I think it's a book that was designed for middle grade, but at the same time, I wanted the message there interesting enough so the parent could pick it up and get some insight into it. I think any groups that are doing restorative justice or any bullying programs, stuff like that. I think that's a book that they should have on their shelf. I'm obviously biased, but I think it's got some insight in there. And I particularly like that it's told from both perspectives, because it kind of opens up that issue from different windows. And so I think almost anybody who's considering these aspects can get a lot out of it.
Yeah, I'm enamored with the restorative groups and the idea of even doing some sort of trial studies on seeing what difference it makes working with and having a bully and a victim in a room and working together and looking, you know, longitudinally if it makes a difference. I look at the ACE study, which was a Kaiser study. I don't know if you're familiar with it. For those listeners who aren't, in 20 seconds, basically it looked at children who have had adversive life experiences as a kid were much more likely to have physical issues later on, addiction, you know, cancers, yada, yada, yada. And so what's fascinating to me really is that early life experiences just have a profound effect on later life. And this book obviously addresses that.
Well, I've seen studies where they've actually, you know, seen kids who have been yelled at a lot and their growth hormone actually stops. And I used to take kids camping all the time, and I will always remember this one kid who I knew was being mistreated terribly by his parents. And he was this little scrawny kid and high-pitched voice and kind of being a victim all the time, kind of running around getting under everyone's nerves. And 10 years later, I heard this big man's voice come over and tap me on the shoulder and say, "Hey, Mr. Diamond, you remember me?" And turned around, and it was this little kid, and he was like 6'6", 240. And I said, "Well, what's changed in your life?" And the first words he said was, "I got out of the house, and I started growing the second I got out of the house."
Wow.
And I think that says it all, eh?
Unreal. Mr. Diamond, what a pleasure. The book is I Bully. How do people go out there and get it?
It'll be published in a couple weeks. It's not on the market rate yet, but any bookstore, you can go into any bookstore, Amazon, all the places where books are, and just either have it brought in. If you don't mind, there's one other thing I would like to say,
please,
to any listeners out there, and that's if you do have somebody you know who's being bullied, one of the best things I've ever done in my career was I asked them to go and do random acts of kindness. And then come back and tell me which makes you feel better. When you're hurting somebody, bullying them, tearing them down to build yourself up, or just go out and do a kind thing and come back into my office and tell me which one makes you feel better. And I can tell you, in my entire 33-year career, I never had a kid come back in and say, "Yeah, bullying was way better." It was always, "Yeah, I feel good about myself."
What a beautiful intervention, instead of being punitive, right?
Oh, absolutely. Just random acts of kindness. I swear to God, I watch kids come in after they'd slink in when they were in trouble, come in to see me because they were bullying. And I'd get them to go out in the hallway, give you 15 minutes. I don't care what it is. Pick a pencil up, open a door for someone, do something kind. And every single time I was able to say, "Look at yourself." The second they came in my office, "Look at yourself. You're standing up straight. Your chest is puffed out. You got a smile on your face. You're looking me in the eyes." That's the way men do it. And every single time they came back, the girls would come back in and they'd be grinning and kind of smiling to themselves. And it was a really effective thing.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for joining us again, Roy Diamond. And the book is I Bully. Roy, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Matt. I had a wonderful time. It was great to meet you.
You too. And please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we are joined by Craig Zamolo, co-creator of The Wrap, a safe restraint system that reduces risk of injury. And if you missed or you want to share our show with your friends, please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com. You may also subscribe or resubmit your name to download your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal, your 21-day guide to achieving the quality of thankfulness through self-discovery. And the next time you're on Facebook and Twitter, please remember to stop by our page and check out some of our latest posts. And if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For all you listeners out there, I hope you have a wonderful day. I'm looking forward to Alan coming back. And thank you for listening to Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.